From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Got a section in this book called Never Have So Few Done So Much for So Few.
Today, Jim Hightower on Thieves in High Places.
They're changing America in a way that we won't recognize and in a way that we do not support and have not been consulted on. They're changing our America of egalitarianism into their America of elitism and empire.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Bush administration yesterday demanded the World Trade Organization force the European Union to lift its ban on new genetically modified food. The U.S. is attempting to force European nations into selling some 30 U.S. biotech food products. Washington's request comes 1 month before a major trade meeting in Cancun, Mexico. The U.S. World Trade Organization envoy claimed yesterday Europe's ban on genetically modified food is unfair to other countries. However, anti-GM campaigners protested the U.S. move. Friends of the Earth Europe said, quote, the U.S. administration, funded by the likes of GMO giant Monsanto, is using the undemocratic and secretive WTO to force feed the world food GM foods. Friends of the Earth Europe continued, decisions about the food we eat should be made in Europe and not in the White House, the WTO, or Monsanto's headquarters. In Liberia, the government and two opposition groups have signed a peace deal that'll create an interim government within 2 months. Last week, President Charles Taylor resigned and went into exile. His vice president, Moses Blah, took power. Under the agreement, Blah will step down in October when the transitional government is formed. Elections are set for 2005. President Bush says U.S. troops will be out by October. Federal Communications Commission Chair Michael Powell says the FCC will examine the effects of concentration in media ownership this fall. This comes following mass criticism of the agency's vote to rewrite the nation's media ownership laws to allow for greater merges in the TV and newspaper world. Powell made the surprise announcement in Aspen, Colorado, at an annual gathering of telecommunications executives. Powell acknowledged, quote, there's a sentiment being expressed by the American people, a concern about the media, a concern about big media. He challenged Congress to draft new legislation to provide the FCC with clearer direction. Meanwhile, Marcia McBride, Powell's chief aide on the media ownership regulations, announced yesterday she's resigning. Powell's media advisor, Susan Eid, also recently left the FCC. Powell dismissed reports he, too, will soon step down. Also yesterday, the Media Access Project and other public interest groups filed a request to bar the FCC from implementing the new rules. The French Director General for Health has resigned after admitting as many as 5,000 people have died in France in recent weeks as a result of the massive heat wave. President Bush has admitted major combat operations are continuing in Iraq. On May 1st, Bush went on national television to proclaim the end, quote, major combat operations. But in a new interview with the Armed Forces Radio, Bush said, we will have combat operations going on. It's a different kind of combat mission, but nevertheless, it's combat. Just ask the kids that are over there killing and being shot at. Questions also arose as to whether Bush knows how many U.S. troops he has sent into war. He said during the interview the U.S. has about 10,000 troops in Afghanistan, which he said is, quote, down from obviously major combat operations. But the Washington Post points out 10,000 troops in Afghanistan actually represents the highest number of U.S. soldiers there since the war began almost 2 years ago. The U.S. used only 3,000 troops to take on the Taliban in the fall of 2001. In northern Iraq, a Kurdish group said today former Iraqi Vice President Taha Yassin Ramadan has been captured. He was among the 20 Iraqis most wanted by the U.S. military. It's been revealed in London one of Prime Minister Tony Blair's closest advisors warned Blair that it would be wrong to present Saddam Hussein as an imminent threat to other countries. Downing Street Chief of Staff Jonathan Powell issued the warning on September 17th, days before Blair released his controversial Iraq dossier, which, among other themes, claimed Iraq would launch a biological or chemical attack. Could launch one within 45 minutes. Jonathan Powell's warning was ignored. He'd written in an email, quote, "We will need to make it clear in launching the document that we do not claim we have evidence that he is an imminent threat." His email was sent to some of Blair's closest advisors, including Alistair Campbell, Blair's director of communications, and David Manning, Blair's foreign policy advisor. This news from Venezuela. Opponents of President Hugo Chavez have collected more than 2 million signatures backing a recall of Chavez. Today is the midpoint in his six-year term, the first day opponents could legally seek that recall. So far, the opposition has collected 2.2 million signatures. It needs about 400,000 more to force the recall. The recall is the latest strategy of the opposition to oust Chavez. A coup and general strike both failed earlier. The UN Security Council is expected to debate tomorrow on whether to lift sanctions placed on Libya after the 1988 Lockerbie bombing. Britain and the U.S. now back the end of sanctions after Libya agreed to set up a $2.7 billion fund to compensate the families of the 270 people who were killed in the Lockerbie bombing. France is threatening to veto the end of sanctions unless Libya increases compensation for a different bombing that killed 170 aboard a French flight in 1989. This news from Afghanistan. An explosion has torn through the home of the brother of President Hamid Karzai today. Police first said the blast was the result of a bomb. Later, they said it was caused by accidental detonation of munitions that were being transported.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground. And I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground. And I won't back down.
Johnny Cash, I Won't Back Down. Here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman. Coming up later in the program, we'll hear more about the Reuters journalist who was gunned down by U.S. troops outside the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. U.S. troops said that they had engaged him. But now, the kleptocrats have taken over. That's how Jim Hightower starts the introduction to his latest book, Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. Jim Hightower is one of the country's leading populists, former agriculture commission and commissioner in Texas. He's a national radio commentator, columnist, author of a number of books on democracy, government, and greed. Last night, he addressed hundreds in New York at an event sponsored by The True Majority. This is some of what he had to say.
I'm kicking off a 30-day, 30-city, rather, 8-week book tour, barnstorming tour of America here tonight, but it's really more than that because this is the kind of events that I want to do with my book, not just sign a few books and get a review in the local paper, but rather to try to use this book and to develop the activism out there and to give people some hope and inspiration and to help raise money for our side and to help rally and to help organize as we go along. Of course, my book, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it features me in red underwear on the cover. And this is a subliminal appeal to the sex market in our country. And it's rather appropriate because it has me wearing... By the way, I stood in front of the Texas State Capitol for 2.5 hours in March while this guy shot pictures of me there. A lobbyist came by and said, "Hightower, I'm not even going to ask." There I was in red long johns for 2.5 hours. But it's kind of appropriate. I mentioned a little story in the book about a Japanese minister of the economy who a couple of years ago was discovered by police to have 400 items of women's underwear in his home, in his apartment. But he assured the public that there was nothing askance here, nothing to worry about, because he said, "I picked up all lingerie on the streets by pure chance." What's better than some of the stories Bush and Karl Rove have been telling, I think. We do still have our underwear in America, but we've been stripped of a more delicate and more precious garment, and that's our democracy. Piece by piece, our people's power to control our environmental, political, economic destinies being filched by a confederacy of corporate kleptocrats, the Enroners and WorldComers, the downsizers and globalizers, the speculators and spoilers, the big shots and the bastards, the Bushites and the bullshitters who are running roughshod over the people of this country and now of the world. Their kleptocracy is now fronted by an overprivileged, snotty, and bratty son of a Bush. And indeed, we gather here tonight in open defiance of King George W. and his autocratic, plutocratic, anti-democratic regime. Lily Tomlin has said that she fears that the man who invented Muzak might be thinking of inventing something else. That is one of my fears as well. But it doesn't rank all that high on my scarometer. I fear that they might find that cancer is caused by beer, for example, and that would be a hell of a devil's dilemma for me. Or maybe they're right. Maybe the hokey pokey is what it's all about. I mean, what do we do then? But the thing that scares me the most is one word: Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and gang. In 2 short years, these people have looted our public treasury to dole out hundreds of billions of dollars to their wealthiest backers. They have defoliated our environmental protections. They have launched a class war on the middle class as well as the poor. They've taken a sledgehammer to our civil rights and our liberties. They've sought to castrate labor unions, turned a $5 trillion surplus into a $4 trillion deficit. They've attempted to privatize everything from Social Security to the post office. And they've also thrown us into a maniacal, messianic, testosterone-driven world war to make the world safe for Halliburton. Now, imagine what they'd be doing if they had actually won the election. But if it's scary you want, you might look down a level below Bush, Cheney, and company, because they're not the worst of the lot. There's Howling Paul Wolfowitz, for example. John Dr. Strangelove Poindexter and his little toys that he's been giving us out of the Pentagon. And then there are hatchet men in the Congress, people like Tom the Exterminator DeLay. I don't know if you know Tom DeLay very much, but you need to get to know this fellow. Well, you know Newt Gingrich. DeLay is Newt on Viagra. Think about that image for a while. But it's also not just the individuals among the Bushites, but their ethic of privilege and plutocracy. An example of that, the airline bailout right after September 11th, $15 billion of our money provided to the airlines. Well, they were pretty hard hit. Maybe they needed the money. But two amendments were attached to that legislation that we didn't hear about. One said that the CEOs of the airlines would make no sacrifice. They did not have to give up a penny of their salaries and their special compensation and their stock options and et cetera, et cetera. The other amendment was even more insidious. It said that not a penny of the $15 billion would go to any of the 140,000 workers who were fired by those CEOs after September 11th. And when it was suggested on the floor of the Congress that, well, wait a minute, we ought to at least include a little unemployment compensation for those 140,000 workers, Dick Armey, then the majority leader of the House of Representatives, got up on his hind legs and stumbled toward the microphone. And he said, "That would not, I believe, be commensurate with the American spirit." Revealing the whole attitude of privilege and plutocracy. I look at a guy like Armey and I think, 100,000 sperm and you were the fastest? Let's be blunt. These people are nuts. Unfortunately, they're in power and they are also dangerous. Voltaire said it's dangerous to be right on matters in which the established authorities are wrong. These people are wrong not merely on policies and budgets, but on philosophy, because they're abandoning the core values of America, the notions that we hold within our guts and that hold us together. Economic fairness, people believe in that. Social justice, that's in our hearts, not always acted on, but it's there. Equal opportunity for all people, that's a part of what America is. That's being set aside. I saw a bumper sticker in my town of Austin, Texas, early this year. It was on an old dilapidated pickup. It said, "Where are we going and what am I doing in this handbasket?" People have a sense that something has gone terribly wrong. And what is wrong is this. It's not just a matter of a tax giveaway there and a regulatory manipulation over here. They're abandoning the essential notion of the common good, the idea that we're all in this together. That's what holds our society together. We are a very diverse population of people. We are a brawling people as well. We are a people, as Bill says, who knows how to use guns. We are a people that they are stomping on. A guy came up to me at an event not long ago. It wasn't a political event. I was just wandering around. It was an art show, actually. And I was in this art show looking around. He came up to me, recognized me, and we had a little chit-chat briefly. And then he grasped my arm with his hand, and he looked at me directly in the eye as though he was seeking confirmation of something that he feared. And he said to me, "They're changing America, aren't they?" And that's right. They're changing America in a way that we won't recognize and in a way that we do not support and have not been consulted on. They're changing our America of egalitarianism into their America of elitism and empire. The empire impulse in this administration is more powerful than anything, I would guess, since the Spanish Civil War. I saw yesterday on the plane coming up here a comic strip in the Funny Pages. I'm an inveterate reader of the Funny Pages. Get some of my very best material from there. And there was a cartoon character who said he was very concerned for George W. He's a George W. supporter. And he said, I've been doing some calculation. There are 165 nations in the world. He's only invaded two of them so far. And the character said, even if he wins a second term, that's still only 65 months in office, so he's going to need to bomb three nations a month from here on out just to keep up. Concerned that maybe George had to get going. Now, that would be funny, except, well, you know. Bush himself said after September 11th, when they were developing their war on terrorism, that they had 60 countries on their list of evildoers. So many countries, so little time. Empire. Empire tends to bloat one's ego. Bush said to the National Security Council last year, I do not need to explain why I say things. That's the interesting thing about being president. I don't feel like I owe anybody an explanation. Why wasn't that on the evening news? Wouldn't you like to buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth? There's a market.
Jim Hightower, author of Thieves in High Places, and we'll come back with him here in a minute. Steve Earle, the truth here on Democracy Now! As we return to Jim Hightower, author of Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back.
Empire, of course, is also expensive. $4 trillion for the Pentagon in the next 10 years, based on their current annual budget. And true majority does such great work, along with business leaders and others, for sensible priorities in our country. That's $4 trillion just to have the war machine idling. It doesn't pay for putting it in gear. Wars are extra. And we're doing $4 billion a month in Iraq and $1 billion a month in Afghanistan right now. $4 trillion. How much is a trillion? I mean, these numbers get so insane. Got a little thing in the book here that I parsed it out in terms of seconds. Think of seconds. Western civilization has not been around for a trillion seconds. In fact, a trillion seconds is 31,688 years. 1 trillion seconds ago, no humans walked on this earth. Yet we're allocating $4 trillion to pay for the super-duper empire of King George W. Lee's here. He'll appreciate this story. He probably knows it about Richie Ashburn, Hall of Fame. Out of the Philadelphia Phillies. Ashburn was a hell of a hitter. And in one ball game in Philadelphia, he hit a screaming foul ball, line drive, smack in the face of a woman. Broke her nose. Game had to be stopped a while. They loaded her on a stretcher. Then, as they were hauling her out, the game resumed. Pitcher wound up, hurled in there, and Ashburn hit another screaming foul ball. And it hit the woman on the leg as she was being hauled out. of the stadium. And that's the way I feel sometimes, that hapless lady bombarded by the Pentagon budget that just keeps pounding us and pounding us and pounding us. Well, they're pushing a new ethic of empire and elitism. Got a section in this book called Never Have So Few Done So Much for So Few. George W. Bush had a fundraiser here in New York City during the 2000 election. This was his attempt to make a little joke. He was looking out over a sea of tuxedos and designer gowns, $1,000 a plate event, and he said, "This is an impressive crowd, the haves and have-mores. Some call you the elite. I call you my base." Another one that didn't make the television sets. So Amy Goodman is telling us again and again and again, the propaganda machine. Well, he's true blue to that base. We know about it in terms of tax giveaways to the wealthiest. We know about it in terms of the military budget. We hear about these things, but also it's taking place in terms of the regulatory wrenching to rig the rules on behalf of corporate interests over the rest of us. 8 words you never want to hear. The White House today issued revised rules for, doesn't matter for what, you know it's going to be just something awful. And they've used executive power to completely redo the regulatory, really undo, unregulate corporations in this country. It's so overwhelming sometimes you can't get a hold of it. Well, you know, they say that in sex, using a feather is erotic, but using the whole chicken, that's kinky. I think some of you have done that. Well, they're using the whole chicken. I pulled out to help readers get a hold of this. I mean, you could say, well, it's a certain number of regulatory reforms or this or that, but those numbers don't mean anything. So what I did was to take 2 years' worth, March of 81 to March of 2003, March of 2001 to March of 2003, 2 years' worth of Bush regulatory changes on environmental issues alone. And here they are. I did them in tiny print so they would not just, you know, ruin everybody. Just going on and on and on, page after page after page after page after page of fine print in this little book to get a sense of the awesome power that they are using. Now, some of our side says, well, Bush is stupid. Well, all right, he doesn't have the brain muscle for any heavy lifting, we know that, but that misses the point, because that's not who Bush even thinks he is. Bush is the affable front man for the thievery. That's his role. That's been his role his entire life. In his oil days, he didn't run the company. He was the rainmaker. He brought the investors. He had the family name and the affable quality that allowed him to raise the money with the Texas Rangers. He was named the general manager, but he didn't manage anything, though it was under his tenure that they traded Sammy Sosa to the Chicago Cubs. But he was the guy out front, you know, slapping the visiting players on the butt and being a hail fellow well met and doing the TV interviews and all that, showing off his hand-tooled red, white, and blue Texas Ranger boots that he had, and just being the front guy. It's the same thing as the governor of Texas. And now that's what he is as president. That's his role. Because he can hide the thievery behind that affability he's been able to up to just recently. Now think if Dick Cheney was president. That wouldn't work. Cheney has a smile like a landlord who just evicted another widow. So that's Bush's role. George said not long ago, you can fool some of the people all of the time. Those are the ones you should concentrate on. Now you're going to get an experience of this coming up. They're masters of propaganda, mass distraction, wag the dog, old-fashioned, unvarnished, unabashed lying as well. And here they come to New York City next year, right?
in September. They're going to use 9/11, the World Trade Center, New York City, like they used that aircraft carrier that Bush flew into in his Top Gun outfit. Did you see they made a doll of that? Little action figure. There's a George W. Bush action figure. You can pay $39.99 and you too can own a 1 foot tall action figure of plastic made in China, George W., dressed up in that little Top Gun outfit. I thought it was kind of appropriate, actually, that it portrays him what he is, a toy soldier, you know, and that sort of works. And I certainly look forward to the bobblehead doll. I think we'd all buy one of those. Well, enough of that. That's the bad news. Bush Co. But here's some good news. The people of America are revolting, in the very best sense of that term. I'm lucky in that I get to travel a lot and into the grassroots area, that real America that Bill was talking about and that Amy broadcasts day in and day out, our voice of democracy, Amy Goodman. So I don't have to get my perception of what America is from the nightly news or the New York Times. And as I go around, just about every place that's got a zip code has somebody or some group of somebodies that is organizing, agitating, battling these thieves in high places. And more often than not, they're winning. They're lighting little prairie fires of rebellion all across our land. It doesn't make the establishment news. But this is the exciting story of the true America. Walmart wars. Walmart is a beast of a corporation, the beast of Bentonville, it's known as, now the world's largest corporation, surpassed Exxon and General Motors a couple of years ago. It is the most powerful depressing force on wages in this country and in the world. Its associates, as they call their employees, make an average of $15,000 a year, but that's if they work full time. Walmart describes full-time as 28 hours a week. They don't get health care. They have no retirement benefits. They discriminate against women. 78% of their employees are women, but only a handful are managers. It's the glass ceiling. Once you hit it, you got to Windex it. You know, that's you know what I'm talking about. And they barge into our communities without so much as a howdy-do, much less a pretty please. They come in cutting deals behind closed doors with the local officials and with the developers. And then suddenly it's announced you're going to have a super center here in your town. Well, the neighborhood's going to suddenly be barraged. A super center is four football fields under one roof, plus the parking lot. They're 24 hours with those nice amenities of the day glow lights that they have out at night there. They squeeze out the independent businesses in local communities using their monopolistic pricing power to force businesses. Of the jobs that they create, they destroy three good jobs in the towns. So people are catching on to this. Republicans, as well as Democrats and Greens and people of none of the above, folks are getting on to this. Why? Who elected Walmart to come remake our town? Well, nobody. The town doesn't belong to Walmart. We're the sovereigns. We're the people. We get to decide this. And again, an untold media story is that in town after town after town across this country, people are defeating Walmart. I was in Arizona last year. Last 3 years, 10 Walmarts defeated in the state of Arizona. Eliminating sweatshop products from our campuses and from our towns and from our states. People are doing that. Students against sweatshops. Ben and Jerry have done a great job with a company called SweatX, TeenX, out in California. A fabulous model for us. I write about that in this book as well. These stories are all in the book because I want people to know that you're not alone. You can do something. People are doing something. And all of these people say, yes, have people call us or send us the emails, and we will work with them. We'll work so the people are having to forge this rebellion themselves, as we've always had to throughout the country. Living wage campaigns, public financing of elections. 4 states have that now, and North Carolina just passed it earlier this year for their judicial elections. New Mexico passed it about in June, I think, for their public utility elections. This change taking place, fundamental change taking place, privacy battles. This is our hope. This is our strength. This is our basis for taking our country back from those thieves in high places. And I've got even a little bit better news for you, if you're able to believe it. Here is my political prediction. W is a one-term president. Yeah. I know that the cognoscenti say, Hightower, you are dumber than a dust bunny. You are clueless about it. Bush is popular. He's a war president. He's bulletproof. Well, no, he's not. His policies are absolutely loopy. And his political base is small and shrinking. The cognoscenti say, well, what are you talking about, Hightower? He won a mandate in 2002 in those congressional elections. No, he didn't. Yes, he got a slim majority in both houses of the Congress, but he did not win the will of the people, because what they don't tell us is only 33% of the American people voted in those congressional elections. Bush is actually the choice of 17% of the eligible voters in America. That's his mandate. Not exactly a political juggernaut. That's all the votes he's going to get. That's the peak. 2000 was his peak, and remember, he didn't win then. But those are the votes. That's the most he can expect. Not only does the emperor have no clothes, he's buck naked and butt ugly. And people are beginning to see it now. This time, some of his own party are appalled by him. Daddy, I quoted some former presidents, Republican presidents leading up to Bush in this book, and I quoted his daddy. Daddy George said, I'm a conservative, but I'm not a nut about it. There's the difference. I was in Maine a couple of weeks ago, and up there met a lot of Republicans who don't like what he's done on environmental issues, don't like what he's done to gays and lesbians, what he's done to women, what he's done to labor unions. So there are forces within his own party that he's not going to have this next time. But especially significant is the fact that the pollsters don't measure. That's the upchuck factor. The intensity of opposition that he has generated among those constituencies that he's been stiffing. So I come to you tonight as that rarest of birds, a progressive optimist in this age of bourgeois. Bourgeois is a word you might want to look up in the dictionary. It means rubbishy nonsense. It actually is a word. And the optimism I feel is genuine, for it comes from the grassroots where true America lives. I think our joyous challenge is to unite with these people, is to rally them, and to organize with them and wallow in the rebellious, fun-loving spirit of our democracy. We're in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about a couple of hundred years ago. And we can't just sit wearing buttons. My friend Fred Harris said you can't have a mass movement without the masses. Pretty simple. Well, the masses are ahead of us. It's not easy to get them organized, kind of like loading frogs in a wheelbarrow, you know, to get our side together. But it's the only way that we have. The only way that we have to build a genuine politics and genuinely take power so we can realize our ideals of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. And I'll say one thing more to you, and that is this is also fun. This should be a joyous experience for us. This is a wonderful time to be progressive and to be alive, fighting for democracy. In fact, it's just about as much fun as you can have with your clothes on, and there are some parts of the country that might be all right. And nothing is more fun than winning. So I'm here to say to you, don't wring your hands about Bush. Join hands, and let's beat him. Then, let's keep joining hands to build a progressive movement that is worthy of America. It's sitting out there in the countryside right now. We have a historic opportunity. The question is whether we will grab it, whether we'll pick it up off the ground. There's a moving company in my town of Austin. I'll leave you with this thought. This moving company has an advertising slogan that I've stolen and used over the years. They actually have it in the Yellow Pages. They say, if we can get it loose, we can move it. That's what we're talking about. Get it loose at the grassroots level. The people will move it for themselves. Thank you so much. Proud to be with you.
Jim Hightower, author of Thieves in High Places, they've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. We'll be back with him live in our studio in a minute.
Fat and docile, big and dumb, they look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be ate at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew, no one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns.
Cows with Guns, Dana Lyons here on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, joined by Jim Hightower himself. His latest book, Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. Welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. Great to be with you on this wonderful Democracy Now! Program that helps to take America back by spreading this voice all across the country. Everywhere I go, folks are tuned in.
Well, Jim, speaking of the media in our headlines, as you were coming in this morning, hearing that the FCC chair, Michael Powell, has now admitted, he says Congress should write the rules. There is a sentiment being expressed by the American public, a concern about the media, a concern about big media. It looks like his two top aides are resigning, and there's been questions about whether he is too.
Well, it is a clear example of a guy who got taken to the woodshed by we the people. This is a tremendous victory. Unfortunately, it's a negative victory. we're still, it doesn't mean we've taken our public airwaves back, but it is very significant. And it was done by the people and through community radio, largely, internet opposition, but folks through community radio, because the establishment media, which was pushing this Powell program, the establishment media was not covering this. It came from
they
folks.
Were busy filing with the FCC supporting the media.
Absolutely, yeah. So to have that 420 vote in the House of Representatives was one of our better days in a long time.
And then we have the Bush administration demanding the World Trade Organization force the European Union to lift its ban on new genetically modified food.
Well, Lily Tomlin once said, no matter how cynical you get, it's almost impossible to keep up. And this is a clear example of it. We're saying to Europeans, no, you cannot decide what's in your food. Only corporations can decide that.
It sounds like Cancun is going to be very interesting with the level of protests that's going to be there.
Yes, at Seattle level, I think. They're going to have a lot of uninvited guests who, once again, are in the streets because we're not inside. And inside, they're doing such absurd things as dictating what people have in their food. And, you know, the interesting part about that appeal to the WTO is that it's going to raise people's consciousness in this country. Say, wait a minute, what is in our food? You're telling us, you know, that there's this altered organism in our food, which, again, the media has not been reporting on, the establishment side. So it's going to raise two things, I think. The fact that corporations are doing that, and secondly, who the hell is the WTO to make these decisions?
Jim, what is happening in your state? I see that Tom DeLay says the state legislature in Texas has to redistrict and is now going after the Democrats who left for Oklahoma not wanting to vote on this.
Well, Tom DeLay got up and had another big old bowl of Fruit Loops, I think, swallowed a few too many of them, and decided that he didn't have enough to do in Washington, so he would begin to interfere with state legislatures' responsibility to redistrict, which state legislatures did in 2001. Now, in Texas, the 2001 legislature redistricting plan was blocked by the Republicans, not by the Democrats, by the Republicans. And then they threw it to a bipartisan panel of judges, and the judges did the redistricting that now DeLay says has got to be redone. And why does he say it's got to be redone? He says because we're not electing enough Republicans, and therefore we have to rig the system so it automatically produces more Republicans. He's talking about six different congressional districts that he says have Republican majorities, but Democrats elected there. Well, go beat the Democrats. If you can't beat them, that's not the voters' fault. That's your fault. You're not putting forth good enough candidates. So he wants to re-rig the system even tighter, drawing these spokes out of suburban areas so that rural areas, for example, of the state, would have no control over their own members of Congress. They would be represented by somebody 250 miles away in a Dallas suburb.
Jim, you are traveling through many states of this country right now on a
yes.
whirlwind tour. You're rolling thunder.
We're barnstorming all over. I'm off right now on a 30-something city tour that is talking about this message of thieves in high places, and more importantly, of how we can take the country back. And that's I'm bringing a message of hope because the media establishment would suggest to us, it's a conservative country, and you people don't have a chance, so don't even fight back. Well, hogwash and horse hockey. I mean, people are fighting back and winning terrific victories all over this great country. So I'm going out and celebrate with those people and also help to raise some money and do rallies and all of that. So we can indeed take America back. We can do it.
Jim Hightower, I want to thank you for being with us. Former
Joy.
Agriculture Commissioner of Texas now has written a number of books. His latest, Thieves in High Places, They've Stolen Our Country, and It's Time to Take It Back. You can find out more about him at his website, jimhightower.com, and his newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
You are listening to Democracy Now! As we move now to the Middle East. Don't kill the truth. The message of hundreds of mourners yesterday marching in Hebron to remember Mazen Dana, the award-winning Palestinian journalist shot and killed by U.S. troops in Baghdad on Sunday. Mourners marched holding photos of Dana, demanding more be done to protect journalists. Some held signs saying, "Don't kill the truth. The occupations kill journalists in Iraq, Palestine." Dana was covering a mortar attack on a prison in Baghdad for Reuters. U.S. soldiers claim they mistook the cameraman's camera for a rocket-propelled grenade launcher and shot him in the chest. Mazen Dana was 43 years old, considered by Reuters to be one of its finest cameramen. He'd earlier received permission to film in the area, and several other reporters who were filming nearby were unhurt. Military spokesman apologized for the killing, but tried to justify it within the context of the ongoing guerrilla war in Iraq. He said, quote, "During wartime, firing a warning shot is not a necessity. There is no time for a warning shot if there is potential for an ambush." Reuters Press, the Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders, all expressed outrage yesterday at the killing of Dana. They demanded a full public investigation by the U.S. military and contested U.S. troops' rules of engagement. Dana is the 11th journalist to die in combat in Iraq since the U.S. invasion in March. That makes Iraq one of the world's most dangerous places for journalists, outranking hotspots like the West Bank and Colombia. Actually, 17 journalists have died in Iraq since the invasion began. Dana was the second Reuters cameraman to die since March 20th. Taras Prostyuk died April 8th after a U.S. tank fired on the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad as U.S. troops took the city. The U.S. military recently absolved American forces of wrongdoing in that incident, saying they fired in self-defense. Witnesses said there was no gunfire from the hotel when the American tank opened fire. Defending against what? In 2001, the Committee to Protect Journalists awarded Mazen Dana its International Press Freedom Award for his determination to keep working despite several close calls. In his acceptance speech, Mazen Dana told the Committee to Protect Journalists, quote, "All journalists have a message, and they are carrying the message. They're not part of the story of the conflict. They're filming what's going on. And journalists, especially the cameramen, show people the truth." We go now to Hebron, to the West Bank, where Mazen Dana was from. And we are going to speak with Paul Holmes, who is the former bureau chief of the Middle East for Reuters, worked closely with Mazen Dana. On the line with us from the West Bank is Abed Kassini, a Reuters camera person and good friend of Mazen Dana. Abed Kassini, welcome. Where are you now?
Hi, everybody. I'm just leaving Hebron towards my city, Nablus, because the body did not arrive yet. It's still in Jordan, and I can't wait till the night to wait for the funeral. So I'm leaving the house of the family.
We had you on April 21st on Democracy Now!, and you were on that day remembering another friend, another journalist and cameraman. He was killed in the occupied territories.
Yeah, he was talking about Nazih Darwaza, the ABTN cameraman who was shot by Israeli soldiers during confrontation with Palestinian soldiers on the 29th of April, 19th of April, sorry.
Paul.
So that happened that time, and it's come again here in Iraq, and another Palestinian cameraman was shot by American troops. So it shows how much danger is going on in the area.
Paul Holmes on with us now, worldwide general editor of Political and General News, Reuters. Can you talk about who Mazen Dana was?
Well, Mazen Dana was, and it's a tribute to Mazen when I say this, for so many years, Mazen Dana was an anonymous name outside the journalistic profession. As you said in your introduction, Mazen believed that his mission was to bring the truth, to bring events into people's living rooms through his camera. And day in and day out, he recorded events in Hebron, largely anonymously. People were aware of events in Hebron thanks to Mazen's courage, thanks to his commitment, and thanks to his professionalism. But they were not aware of Mazen as a person. And I want to say here that any journalist who has covered the Israeli-Palestinian conflict for any length of time knew Mazen and knew his commitment to the story. And he will be very sadly missed by the entire journalistic community.
Mazen Dana was one of a number of journalists who went to the prison. So in a sense, he was in a pack. He went to the Abu Ghraib prison because there had been a mortar attack there. This is a description. Mazen Dana's camera captured the last moments of his life. The video shows a U.S. tank driving towards him outside the prison. Two shots ring out. His camera falls to the ground. Dana is hit in the chest. Blood pours from a huge exit wound in his back. His sound engineer told reporters they had talked to U.S. soldiers just minutes before He said, quote, they saw us, they knew about our identities and our mission. The official line of the Pentagon was that soldiers accidentally, quote, engaged a cameraman. Your response?
Well, we've asked for a full and thorough investigation into this incident. It's not really sufficient for the American military simply to say, we mistook this cameraman for a combatant and we opened fire and that's the end of the story. There are questions here that need to be answered about the rules of engagement. There are questions that need to be answered about how troops in a situation like Iraq interact with the media. This is the most covered conflict in history. And American and British forces have welcomed international coverage of this conflict. And welcoming coverage of a conflict comes with responsibility. So we really do insist here on a complete investigation, and we want the findings to be made public, and we'll draw our conclusions from that about how better to protect our journalists in situations of conflict.
Paul Holmes, Reuters has been hit very hard. First, the attack on the Palestine Hotel hits the office of Reuters, and you have a cameraman killed there, and now Mazen Dana.
Right. Well, that's partly why we're insisting so strongly this time on an investigation. In the prior case, on April the 8th, we conducted our own investigation into that incident, into the killing of Taras Protsyuk, and so did the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York. And independently, we reached the same conclusion, and that was that although, you know, there was not a deliberate attack on journalists, there was a breakdown in communication, as far as we found out, in the American chain of command. The Palestine Hotel was quite clearly known to the military as a base for most journalists during the invasion of Iraq. And their conclusions appear to suggest that was not a consideration in the decision to open fire.
Abed Kusini, your two close friends and colleagues now dead, the Associated Press cameraman in April, Naza Darwaza, gunned down by an Israeli soldier, and now Mazen Dana. You are a cameraman yourself. Does it make you question what you're doing?
Of course, yeah. It makes a big question in front of me what I'm doing. You know, when Nazir was killed, I was asking myself, not just me asking, the whole family. When you have a wife and four children, Nazir has five children, and Mazen has four, you think about the situation, the future of your family. You hesitate to accept an offer to go to Iraq, for example. Even Palestine is a very dangerous place to cover the conflict, but Iraq is a big war, and I'm afraid to accept an offer from Reuters in the future to go there. So my family, my wife, my mother telling me, don't accept. If you want to go, and another thing I want to say, that Hassan Titi, I think you remember the name, who was between me and Nazih, when Nazih was shot, was in Baghdad, and he was on his way back with the body to Palestinian areas. He called me, and he told me to refuse an offer.
Well, Abed Kusini, I want to thank you for being with us, close friend of Mazen Dana, the Reuters cameraman who has just been gunned down in Iraq, and Paul Holmes, worldwide general editor of Political and General News of Reuters. Thank you. And we will be linking on our website information about Mazen Dana at democracynow.org. You can also join our daily digest there, democracynow.org. If you want a copy of today's show, call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Nell Geiser and Sharif Abdelkaddous and Lenina Nadal and Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press and Parvez Sharma. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Today.